Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Good Radio Network, radio that does a world of good. This isn't your average talk radio show. We're blasting away the old tried and not so true mold. Instead, TGRN turns talk into action. And action leads to doing positive things for people, our environment, and even the animals.
Well, I'm only one person. What can I do?
A lot. Join host Frankie Picasso while she turns talk into doing and gets results. This is the Good Radio Network. Yes, you can do it if you try, even if you're just a regular guy. Now, here's your host, Frankie Picasso.
Good day to you, and welcome to the Good Radio Network. I am your host, Frankie Picasso, and today is an amazing day, and I want to thank you all for joining me, whether you're joining the live show at 1 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, September the 24th, or you are listening to the archives. Again, thank you for joining us. Today's Good Minute. Since the civil war in Syria started in 2011, more than 9 million refugees have fled the country. And while Europeans are offering up houses to refugees, an Egyptian billionaire wants to buy an island where tens of thousands of refugees can live and work. He wants to give them hope. Naguib Sawiris is offering to buy an uninhabited island from either Italy or Greece, large enough to sustain 200,000 people. He said all he needs is permission, and he's going to buy the island, and he's going to provide the jobs. The CEO promises to pay refugees to build their own houses and schools, along with a hospital and a university. How amazing is that? Mr. Sawiris, he owns Orascom. It's a diverse company that spans transportation, construction, and communications. It's Egypt's largest private sector employer, and his family has been active in helping Egyptians through their foundation for 14 years. They provide scholarships, training, job placement for people, and they award prizes for Egyptian literature. Mr. Sawiris suggests that the refugees could turn the island into their own country, and he suggested naming the new nation, what else, but Hope. And I agree, Mr. Sawiris. I think it's a great name, and many blessings to you for your generosity. And today, you are the ambassador of good. And I'm really pleased to give that tag to you. Another great guy is my guest today, and he is a very dynamic young man, a change maker, a man of faith, who is fast becoming a prominent leader in his community as he leads the advancement and the development of the greater Hartford community. In 2008, Ashley Johnson, we're going to call him AJ today, graduated with a bachelor's degree in religious studies education from the W.L. Bonner College of Columbia, South Carolina. And in 2013, this young man, after the passing of his father, the late Dr. William M. Johnson, Ashley took on the responsibility and the challenge of pastoring Urban Hope Refuge, which is located in the heart of the north end of Hartford and is considered one of the toughest neighborhoods in Hartford. And in 2014, AJ was recognized by the Hartford Business Journal as one of the 40 Under 40 Award recipients, the Merrily Milstein Award for Organizing, Activism, and Leadership, and the 100 Men Color Award. Quite a feat. In addition to this ministry, AJ also has a passion for business, and he runs an organization called Small Business Night Out, which is devoted to assisting small business owners and young entrepreneurs to advance and stimulate economic development in their local area. Quite a pedigree for a young man of 30, but let's not stop there. On August 25th, AJ and co-coordinator Devon Ward, local attorney who works with the public health in Hartford, created an event they called Calling All Brothers. Now, these gentlemen gathered together 100 of Hartford's Black professionals, CEOs, doctors, lawyers, policemen, to come dressed for work and gather outside the Martin Luther King Jr. Elementary School to greet students on their first day back at school. Now, I think this is a great place to bring AJ on and let him tell the story from here. So welcome, Ashley. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Frankie. It's a pleasure to be on, and God bless everybody who's listening all across the world, man.
Yeah. So you are a man with big plans. I can tell just reading about you, you know, from business to faith and all of that great stuff in between. And I call people like you actionaries because you're visionaries who act. And that kind of gets stuff done. So looking at August 25th, would you say that that was a successful day? I want to know, was there good feedback from kids, from their parents?
Man, it was definitely a successful day. And one, I appreciate you calling me an actuary because too many people do a lot of talking and not enough acting.
Yeah.
The day was a success because two things. It was done in the purest form possible. My friend and I, Devon Ward, he saw a picture of these kids slapping high fives. I didn't know what the picture was, but he tagged me, and he was like, "This looks really cool. We should do it." And when you say action, I'm a person who's all about action. So I said, "Cool, let's do it." I went through my Facebook list, got all of the black men in my neighborhood together and put them all into one group on Facebook, a group message group, and called it Calling All Brothers. And it was just such a beautiful thing to see. I mean, just to see how those kids were just amazed by 100 well-dressed black men outside their school rooting for them on their first day was just a beautiful thing. And the other thing on this issue, Frankie, is that in our country, the black man is portrayed as a thug. We're portrayed as problems. I wanted to change what our kids in that particular school thought about themselves. If I was asked to do their graduation last year, and I noticed that 95% of the graduating class was black boys. They only had four girls. Four girls graduated.
Why
so
was
I
that,
felt
do you
the
think?
Need. I mean, our neighborhood schools, you know, I can go into a whole thing about our neighborhood schools and magnet schools and charter schools, but our neighborhood schools are just suffering at the moment. So it's low attendance. Most of the kids are going to, you know, these better performing schools and leaving the neighborhood schools and, you know, in the community, you know, alone. But
well, do you think that, excuse me, AJ, but did you think that these girls, you know, they dropped out of school or did they attend a different school?
No, that's just how it, you know, it shook out in this particular school. That,
what age grade, what age group are we speaking? This is elementary, grades 1 through 8?
Absolutely. We're talking about the 8th grade class.
Okay. Okay.
The 8th grade class. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So are these
inspired
girls?
From there.
No, I'm just curious about these girls. Now you got me all curious about these girls. I'm wondering if you know, are they pregnant? Are they working? Are they, like, why aren't they in school?
I'm unsure why they're not attending Martin Luther King School.
Oh, okay.
You know, but there are other schools that are starting to sprout up in our community, which are, you know, charter and magnet schools.
Right.
So I can imagine the parents might have felt that their kid would do better in a charter school rather than a community school. So that might
In a charter school, is that a private school?
Yeah, it's more of a private school. It's something that, you know, that the state funds and, you know, again, like I said, I can go into a whole,
sure,
whole bunch
yeah.
of stuff that's completely
Well, we might talk
off-topic.
About that. I don't know yet. you made a statement. Let me just see here. You made a statement that all these kids see is homicide after homicide. In fact, the county
Absolutely.
Has just had its 24th homicide the week before school started. And I'm wondering, you know, how do you erase this history from their young minds? I mean, I think what you did was brilliant. I think, you know, showing them that there is a different path that they can walk down and have it see a different result. Amazing. You know, amazing. But is that going to be, you know, enough to say, you know, I live in a place where people are murdered all the time? Like,
right. So, you know, for the kids, I mean, that one effort is definitely not enough, but it was a start. And,
right.
And our urban community, especially neighborhoods of color, it's very hard to see black men. You don't see enough black men coming together. So
right.
to see how this particular event brought together, the great thing about it wasn't just the kids. It was the fact that black men got together
mm-hmm.
and actually did something together that was, like, so great and so positive. I mean, to see these guys come together. I mean, we had state representatives, we had lawyers, we had film directors, we had senators, VPs of banks, the regular old Joe from, you know, from around the way, come together and be in one place, and it not be a competition, it not be who's better than who, but
right.
just us standing together to greet.
And you know what I love?
Back to-
not mm-hmm. that they weren't sports figures. You know, they weren't entertainers.
Right.
They're regular
right.
people with really great jobs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it was just a sight to see. I mean, these are your everyday people. Your everyday people that you see every day, whether you see them
right.
on the news.
Somebody's dad.
Whether you see them. Yeah, like there was somebody's dad. And if they weren't dad, they were cared enough to show up that day. So, It was a beautiful thing. We did it at two schools. One was Martin Luther King School. The second school was Simpson Waverly, which Maurice Eastwood organized. So it's something that trickled throughout this country.
Wow,
it's
I love
something that.
That
I went from Connecticut to New Jersey, from Jersey to Delaware, from Delaware, just black men coming together, and it's. It's a super positive thing. I can't say any more about it. It's just an awesome thing.
I'm just going to give out our call-in number, because if you are a man of color or a woman of color or any color, really, I want you to call and get in on this conversation, because there's a lot of important stuff, really. There's a lot of meat and potatoes in this. Give us a call, 845-241-9943, 845-241-9943. Hit the number 1 so that I can see you in the host queue. How difficult was it for you to get these guys out?
I'm a pastor and I'm a community organizer, right?
Right.
So getting people to turn out is probably the toughest thing. When I say I ask these brothers, now let me say this first. The school day started at 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
At 8:30, the kids did not start arriving till approximately 8:15, 8:30, right?
Right.
I told these guys to be out there at 7 o'clock knowing that people are late. When I got there myself at 7:10, I was late. There were over 50 to 60 already standing
oh
out there.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
50 to 60 guys
Amazing.
Already standing out there dressed. And when I got there, I was overwhelmed myself. I mean, I was overwhelmed because, one, I didn't know what the response would be, because, you know, people say they do something and then they don't come. So
yeah,
I don't really know.
Exactly.
I try to manage my own expectations. But to have 50, 60 guys there already was
incredible.
Out of this world. So the response was amazing. Again, I think that we're living in a time now where people want to do the right thing, particularly black men. You know,
uh-huh.
like I said, we've been in our neighborhood. The 06120 neighborhood in Hartford, Connecticut, is the poorest neighborhood. There were 25 homicides then. We're already at like 28 now.
Wow.
So there's some folks who've lost their lives, particularly young, particularly black men. So I think at this point in time, at least in this city, we're tired of it and we're ready to do something. So that one act of having those guys there have created energy to say, let's take our community back. Let's
mm-hmm.
find a way to disrupt the negativity that's going on and to act on, you know, act on some of the things that we can do. So right now we're in the process of organizing, seeing what we can do to make a difference. But it didn't stop there. A lot of people thought this was a one-trick pony. But, you know, it's not a one-trick pony. This is something that we plan on doing in our schools and our community going forward.
That's fantastic. I think that's really fantastic. You know, I probably about 6 months ago, maybe, I had a young woman, Nizia Easterling, on, and she's from Camden, New Jersey, so the toughest neighborhood in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah. We are Camden.
Yeah, and she, you know, she started a ministry, and she started a group for kids, because most of her kids, their parents have been killed in gang slayings and stuff. So these, mm-hmm. you know, she gave them a place to come to do their homework, to find some love, to get some food, to do whatever. And she has an amazing program. But I know that, you know, she as a woman and alone, that she really felt like, you know, she gives these kids hope, but at the same time, it's so difficult. It's so difficult to offer them a different future than what they're looking at.
Absolutely. So the way I feel about it, Frankie, is that in our urban neighborhoods, in these neighborhoods primarily of color, black and brown people, we have a problem. We have a problem. Now, you know, funny that in every black and brown neighborhood, there's always the stigma of the worst education.
Mm-hmm.
Do you realize that almost in every black and brown neighborhood, you can't find a Fortune 500 company that will come and invest in it other than a McDonald's or a fast food, other than a fast food corporation?
Enterprise,
so,
yeah.
Yeah.
Why
so,
is that?
I mean, oh, man, why is that? Well, I think primarily I think that we've been displaced. I think that folks are, you know, people will not invest in our neighborhood. So my biggest thing with my church is that we will invest in our own neighborhood. You can't wait for a Walmart to come invest in your neighborhood
right.
and bring you jobs. You can't wait for a Target to come in your neighborhood and bring you jobs. You can't wait for folks to come fix, you know, our education system. We've got to be more active politically. We've got to be more active in the business world. We've got to be more active in getting engaged in our own
investing in our own community. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something, you know, if I can say this, it's something that I have witnessed through the years has kind of been lacking in the black community is, you know, not the superstars and stuff, but with, you know, with each other, like, you know, when I look at immigrants who come in pockets, like, you know, the Vietnamese kids and the Indian kids and whatever, you know, they come in, they have the you know, the worst jobs, and in 5 years, boom, you know, they're homeowners. They work together and they become homeowners and buy, you know, invest in business and move on. But in the black community, I don't feel like they want to work together. I don't know if it's a competition but typically, I mean, by this point in time, they should have been able to work together and everybody give each other a hand up. And, you know, let's do this together. So what's going on?
Well, I want to push back on that statement and say it's not that we don't want to work together. It's the fact that we have not had any of the resources to work together. If you look at our neighborhoods, banks don't invest in our neighborhoods.
Right.
And I'm just talking about in Hartford. I can imagine in places like Camden and other places like that, certain institutions won't even invest. If you look at the services that any urban or ghetto neighborhood has, all we have is nonprofits, churches, and liquor stores.
Okay, so I got to ask this. I'm going to ask questions, AJ. Is that okay? And I know
no,
you can answer them.
Absolutely.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Now, is it the cart before the horse or the horse after the cart? You know, are there murders and robbing and all that kind of, you know, horrible things that you hear about? Is that because they can't get work, or is it, you know, if they got work, they didn't want to work anyway. They want to get on welfare and have babies or something. And, you know, would they take the job at minimum wage? Would they, you know, take the leg up if it was given to them? And I'm not talking about you. Yeah.
No,
okay.
No, yes, absolutely. And again, I can't speak for everybody, but
right.
all I can speak is my perspective, where I am and how things work around here. Yes, folks would be able to, would love to get a job if they could get a job. But I don't know if you noticed. So let me finish. I don't
sure.
know if you noticed, but in most neighborhoods, I mean, most folks are over-policed. And the average person in my church, where my church sits, the average male has a felony on his record. For
okay.
something small, for something big. And
okay.
when you get a felony, that kind of limits housing. It limits whatever you can do. So
okay.
the minute you sit down and you do decide to get your life back together, you already have a felony and folks are looking at you crazy. So
right.
it's not the fact that folks won't take the job. They're not even getting an opportunity to get an interview for the job.
Okay. But you had 100 professionals show up.
Mm-hmm.
Are any of them prepared to hire, you know, these guys in the neighborhood?
Are any of them, most of them own small businesses and aren't able to move in that capacity. Maybe one or two people.
Okay.
Most folks work for other law firms and other things like that. So, you know, maybe yes, maybe no. And when we get to that point, we'll figure that out. But that
right.
still doesn't excuse the fact that in my neighborhood, there's like 80% of people don't have jobs.
Oh, wow. That's huge. That's huge.
You know, that doesn't excuse that. And like I said, a lot of people are looking for someone, the governor or the mayor, to come and ride in on a white horse to save the neighborhood. We got to save our own neighborhood. We have to
That's right.
more savvy ourselves. So that's the message that we're showing. That's the message that we're
I love
trying
it.
To portray.
So do you think that some of these business minds could get together and create a company or create jobs for these people in a way that, you know, you say, hey, let's just take a product and make it, or let's just, you know, think of something where everybody people can outsource to us and we're going to fill that need together.
Right.
And somebody like you organize it.
When you say, Frankie, when you say these people, we're talking about Americans. We're talking about Americans. We're talking about people who live in America. So, yes, these Americans need jobs. Yes. And outsourcing and all that stuff, that's why I created Small Business Night Out. Small Business Night Out is a networking organization that is primarily for minority business owners to come together and talk about what resources do they need and what resources can we get together. So plans are in place, and I hope we can do this everywhere in the country.
You know, I was reading about your neighborhood because I'm not from there, obviously, and it's kind of interesting that you have a history. You got a great history there, actually. It's an abolitionist, you know, county. Mm-hmm. That's Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin there. It's very anti-slavery.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, I think, 37% of the population is black. So, I think he's coming out now, but you had a Puerto Rican gay mayor. I mean, it seems quite liberal.
Yeah, I mean, but also to add, this was one of the last of the original states to abolish slavery, if you want to add that piece in as well. One of the last original states to do it.
It was one of the
last states
to abolish slavery, and they were abolitionists. That's
right,
great.
Right. So you hear the contradiction. Also, this is was the richest state, may still be the richest state, but the poorest capital. So there's a lot of contradictions that go on. Go on around here. The simple fact of the matter is this city is only 18 square miles. 18.
Oh, wow.
18 square miles. And there's only really one neighborhood that suffers over here, which is the north end of Hartford. So it's clear, it's blatant, and it's disrespectful. And you know, folks are tired of it. And now you're starting to see a generation of young people like myself in their 30s that's willing to step up, that's willing to go to the Capitol, that's willing to hold the governor accountable, that's willing to hold the mayor accountable, that's willing to hold the process accountable in the city to change the dynamics. You know, if your police department, like you said, if the city is 30% black, why is the police department like 80% white? Like, you get what I'm saying? So
I hear you there.
We got to start
yeah.
changing those things. So,
but do you think that okay, you're going to go and you're going to champion for these people, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had the conversations with, I'm going to quote out here, the people, you know, those who are feeling disheartened, who feel hardened against society, you know, who are out there doing whatever they're doing in their gangs or killing or, and you know, maiming. Is there a conversation going on with them that says, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to try to make all these changes for you, but you also have to take responsibility for your own self. Just as a parent, you know, my kids say, they might have said to me, well, you know, because you did this, I'm like this. And I go, well, you know what? That works until you're maybe 25. And then after that, you're really an adult and you have to take responsibility for your own actions, you know? So do you think that people will be willing to take responsibility once you give the make the way for them? I'm not talking about the young kids because, you know, you can channel them now, but those who, let's say, harder elements in your town.
Well, I'm having a tough time understanding the question, but I think what you're trying to say. As adults, well, these adults take responsibility for their actions.
Yes, I believe so. I feel that at any given, there's a universal in organizing that says something like this. You know, if any person given the opportunity to do the right thing, they will do the right thing. So
okay,
yes,
I guess that was my question.
Yeah, I think people will do the right thing. It's the simple fact of the matter is who's willing to come and invest in Black and Latino neighborhoods. Who's willing to come invest? Who's willing to
right.
come spend the money? Of course, the stereotype is, you know, all we do is sell drugs. All we do is this. But the simple fact of the matter is, like, you know, one, the people I know don't have passports to go get drugs. So,
right.
How they get here, you know, is a whole other thing, right? Guns, half of the people, you know, can't afford to buy guns, but guns show up in the neighborhood. So if things were done right, the same way it would be in a middle-class white neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
right, the standard there, if that was the standard in Black neighborhoods, you would see a significant change. But the standard isn't the same.
So what makes
the
you different?
The same.
What makes you different?
What makes, man, the fact that I have God in my life and the fact that I had parents who really looked out. I had parents who made me go to college. I mean,
mm-hmm.
my story is very strange. The night before I was supposed to go to college, I was locked in a jail cell. And, you know,
really?
The judge told me, absolutely, the judge told me, you know, if I ever see you here again, I'll bury you under the judge. So, you know, I had people in my life that invested time in me. My parents were, you know, particularly my dad who passed away, was very invested in me and made sure I did the right thing even when I didn't want to do it. And the problem
mm-hmm.
is now, you know, we have too many single-parent homes in our communities and children raising children that we
right.
have to, these 100 people, men that we have, these Black men, are going to invest in a young man's life to show them what it is to be a man, to be that mentor. So I'm trying to make that difference. We're trying to make that difference, the same difference in these young people's lives. It's the same impact. So, like I said, it's changing. I'm not disheartened. I'm excited. You should be excited.
Good. I'm excited for you. You know, I had a young Black man on the show. He started an organization called In the Heart of a Man, and he, you know, he set up a group where men can talk to other men, young men can talk to other men about their problems, about what it means to be a man, because not everybody like yourself grew up with, you know, in a two-parent household with rules and the kind of upbringing, you know, being able to go to college and that, you know, everybody else had. And so he started this organization. I think it's great because I think men don't often talk to other guys, you know, not, they don't usually
absolutely.
Open up their hearts to that.
Absolutely. You know, just doing research, well, not even doing research, just watching how these men interacted or are interacting with each other has opened up new levels of possibilities on what we can do. So my suggestion to folks that are listening, you know, go through your Facebook list, go through your social media networks, create a group message, and start the conversation. Whether it's women, because I think women need to get together too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, particularly Black men, Puerto Rican men, get together and organize. Start the conversation and watch how fast it will grow. Watch how much the interest is there. And the cool thing about our group of men that I respect is that they're committed to it. Like I said, it wasn't a one-shot pony. It wasn't a one-shot gun. These men are dedicated, and it also helps us build ourselves.
Right.
It also helps us build ourselves. We have an opportunity to talk to one another. We have an opportunity to express some things, even about being a grown man. You know, we have tax professionals. You know, what do I do with my taxes? We got
right.
health professionals. We got lawyers. We got folks. Now the network is coming together. Now the power is coming together. So, you know,
there's
I challenge
substance.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you know, I know that everybody was dressed, you know, impeccably. I saw that. And you've got a real sense of style, I have to tell you, AJ. You really
thank
did.
You. I'm a third for it, so yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Well, I read that your mom instilled the importance of looking your best. And I know that, you know, my own daughter has collected clothes and suits for young people who are going for jobs and things like that. And I wonder, do you have something like that where, you know, because the clothes sometimes does make the man. You feel different when you're dressed differently.
Oh, absolutely. So these 100 men, we decided to adopt the eighth grade classes in the worst performing schools, the eighth grade boys, and the worst performing schools in Hartford. And what we're doing throughout the year, we are going to each class. So a few Fridays ago, what we're doing is we are creating like a curriculum that shows what it is to be a man and what makes a man. So our first group that we did with this class at Martin Luther King School of Boys, what we did was we talked to them about the importance of time. We talked to them about time, and each guy, we had maybe about 5-6 guys who got up and talked about the importance of time. And what we did was we gave each boy a watch. So throughout the school year, we are going to be giving what we think a black male should have that makes him a man. So one time it will be a suit, next time it will be shoes, next time it will be a tie, next time it will be a shirt, next time will be a suit. Next, you know, so throughout the year, they're getting these tools to present themselves. And every time we go there, we're dressed to the nines. We're dressed to impress, because like you said, well, my mother told me, she told me as a young man, as a black man, you're already starting from behind. So how you look plays a very important role on how people portray you. So ever since my mother told me that, and I saw the difference on how I got treated in school, when I went to school not dressed in Jordans, not dressed in polo shirts, but dressed with a shirt and a tie before there was a dress code, I saw the difference of how I was treated than some of the other guys were treated. So I took that throughout my life, and I looked to dress like I'm ready for work, like I'm ready for business. So,
and what about speaking? You know, when you talk to these, when you talk to the kids, do you speak like language, and do you expect, you know, proper language and things from them? Are you asking them to step up in that way?
We ask them to speak English, but we have to understand we're living in a different world, in a different culture, in a different generation of people, period.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of the language has changed. I'm a preacher, so I don't go in the pulpit speaking the King James Version of the Bible all the time, because that's not, you know. So I might add I might add some terminology that's more, you know, that's more conducive to the environment. Do we expect our kids to achieve well in the English language? Yes, but we have to understand, too, that we're living in a world where words are added every day to the Urban Dictionary. So
it's true.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, we raise the standard of speaking, but at the same time, we're culturally competent enough to know that sometimes, you know, you got to come down to their level and talk to them.
Right. So I know that you're you know, you're involved in this business, and are you actually teaching business or any investment or things like that in your group? Are these all entrepreneurs?
Yeah. Well, what we're looking to do this year, because we're only about a year or two old, and we're looking to start doing more workshops in neighborhoods on, you know, how to start, how to get going, how to present your business, how to go out and get the funding. And we're also trying to bring the funding to the people, because everything is so, you know, governmentally, it's just so hard, so much red tape. So, you know, the biggest thing about me is, and that I preach to everybody, is relationships are important. So, you know, we have, you know, I have relationships with a lot of people who are willing to come, you know, have relationships with our congressman, relationships with our governor, relationships with the chair of the SBA, to come down and to do these things instead of sitting in the office waiting for people to come to you, actually come and give the resources to the people. So, so relationships are important. So we're attempting to do workshops going forward next year.
What can people help with right now? What's your greatest need?
Our greatest need at the moment, I can't even say it is a need, because, again, the thing that we need is within the group.
Okay.
So it's not that we need anything.
People are listening. Can they join the group? Can they help? What could they do
absolutely.
If they want to get involved?
I say that if everybody who's listening, whether you're black male or black female, in a tough neighborhood, to just get the conversation going. We call it our group Calling Our Brothers. So in your city, create a group and call it Calling Our Brothers and
mm-hmm.
do something.
Mm-hmm.
do something.
Just
do something. Find a need and do something. And you'll see how organic it is, and you see how the momentum comes, and you see how things change.
Has anybody had the conversation with you about people, you know, some of the business people about putting some small micro loans together for some people to see, you know, help some entrepreneurs in the area, young?
Well, we've had some conversations here in the city of Hartford about some things to bring business and to do it. The conversation isn't where I would like it to be, but I mean, at least there is conversation at the moment. But I think we have to do more self-development first.
Okay.
Of folks who want to get started in business, we have to do more development, personal development with them first. There are some people who have a business plan who are ready to go, and those are the people that we push forward to do. But the idea for us is, like I said, nobody's going to come in our community and give us anything.
Right.
We have to get to the point where our credit is ready, our character is ready, our mind is ready for the change. So this is a whole change and shift of people. So we've got to.
I see AJ for president, you know? I think it's in your future.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. You never know. You never know.
Yeah.
I'm one of the people who like to be involved and have the energy to do whatever it takes to get it done. So
it's great. You're young.
I'm excited.
And now's your time. Yeah. What kind of businesses
Absolutely.
Would you like to see in your neighborhood?
I would like to see whatever business that is organic to the community. You know, and too many times in black neighborhoods and in urban neighborhoods, we see other cultures come in. And it's not their fault. It's not our fault. It's nobody's fault or problem. But we see too many people come in and offer services that we can do ourselves. So, you know, I would like to see us take back over our economics in our neighborhood. So I can't say what businesses would thrive in Camden or Brooklyn
mm-hmm.
or anything like that. But I think there are people there who haven't had a shot to give an idea, to produce an idea, who haven't had a shot or financial backing to do it, that have good ideas. So I think there's people right in the neighborhood that's walking around right now with no job that has the opportunity to do something innovative. We're all born with a genius ability. We're all born with a great idea. It's
absolutely.
It's getting people to the point where they take their ideas and watch them happen. So
the thing is that in some ways you almost have to have a large employer so that people who are starting smaller businesses, you know, people can come with money and purchase stuff
absolutely.
On them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, I'm a pastor of a church. So my father's goal when I was a kid, or his dream was the church control the economics in the community. The church controls that. As an organizer, I'm attempting to build power amongst churches to get them to the point where they kind of control the economics and the things in their community. And, you know, organize the people for power in their neighborhood, empowering people to do it. Our current system, the way things are, and at least in my neighborhood, is that the democratic system doesn't work. Because if the
right.
democratic system worked, you wouldn't have 6% out of 124,000 people coming out to vote. So
right.
we have to start empowering people to be leaders and to make the change that they want to see. But right now we have disenfranchised people. We have people who don't want anything to do with government, don't want anything to do with the things around them because they're too busy with life.
Mm-hmm.
They're too busy trying to figure out how they're going to get to their next appointment. They're too busy trying to figure out how they're going to get their next meal. They're too busy getting too many no's on jobs and getting yes. So, you know, we got to get the people back empowered and feeling like they own something. So you know, that's what it feels like to me.
What about utilizing volunteerism as a means of gaining skill without having to pay for it?
Tell me more.
Well, you know, I think that oftentimes people can volunteer for opportunities and gain skills as project managers or gain skills as whatever it is that they want to do, you know, but they're getting it kind of free of charge because they're volunteering their time. And instead of, you know, having to spend money on a business course, you volunteer with a business and you see and become part of that and understand how it works. And maybe, you know, it's short term, maybe it's long term, but it's a way of gaining skill, a life skill, let's say, you know, if you don't have time to go to school or you can't afford to go to school.
Yeah, and you know, this idea that you're speaking of is a great idea. If we have more people like you trying to figure out what does these communities that are suffering need and make that the topic of conversation and not capitalism and not, you know, and not all these other conversations that don't really solve a problem, I think that this country and these neighborhoods will be in a different place. But as of right now, people just aren't thinking of solutions. They're looking at the problems. Oh, there's so much violence. Oh, there's so, you know, so many problems coming out of these neighborhoods. All this, all that, you know, and, you know, taking their family and moving out, you know, of a neighborhood. But
right,
we need more people to come and find a solution to the problem, because we are going to continue to have this problem of violence and all, you know, all these things that we
right.
don't like to talk about, that we sweep under the rug, going on until we have some people committed to come up with cool ideas like that. You know, I just don't think folks have really invested the time in figuring out what can we do in these urban neighborhoods.
I think sometimes what happens. I'm sorry to interrupt you there. And I was just thinking, you know, sometimes what happens is that there's not enough knowledge to think of ideas, you know, like you don't know what you don't know. And so when you invite sometimes outsiders in to, even if you had an idea, you know, seminar online, a digital online, you know, idea day or something, you might hear things or, you know, things might come up that people hadn't thought of.
Right. Well, I'll even go as far to say this. If people are interested in changing the inner cities in their towns and in their states, I would just go sit down and talk to people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Go talk. Stop being afraid of people and go sit down and listen. My job as an organizer is I go out into the community and I listen. And I listen
mm-hmm.
to the needs. I listen to the concerns. And once you start listening, I mean, you know, I'm a believer in the Holy Spirit and, you know, and in God and church and all that stuff. But I believe that God will give you a solution if you just don't listen. But if you just
right.
step back and just keep guessing, you know, well, why don't we just throw some money to these programs? No, stop throwing money. Go down there and listen to the people.
Right.
Listen to them. Listen to them. And you'll understand where the disconnect happened. There are more good people that live in these neighborhoods than bad people. You'll begin to understand that.
Right. I believe that. You know, people
yeah.
are people everywhere. And people
if given
just
the right
need,
opportunity to do
yeah.
good, people do good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I believe that. So if you're listening, pick AJ up on that. Go down and talk to people and see what it is that they really need. And see how you can contribute to. I like to call myself a solution strategist. I think maybe
mm-hmm.
you want to take that title on too. I think it's prefer to look for solutions than look for problems. So, you know, that's a better way of addressing an obstacle is to see, you know, and search solutions rather than what was hard. Edward de Bono, he's the father of creativity. I don't know if you ever heard of Six Hats, but he created a program where people would put on a different hat, six colored hats. And when you had the colored hat on, like say a green hat, you had to think of all the reasons why something's going to work. And the black hat is all the reasons why something's not going to work. And the white hat, you know, is all the reasons, you know, where you can get the money from. And it forces you, whether you believe in something or not, to think from a different perspective. And I think that's what's needed here. You know, what the old way of thinking isn't working. A new paradigm needs to be created. And so, and these, you know, men that you've collected have a really great opportunity to come up with a new paradigm. And within the community,
right.
and them too. Because the old way is not working.
Right, right, absolutely, and that's all I'm saying. There's reform that needs to be that needs to happen everywhere. There's reform needs to happen, and it's cool. It's to see these guys want to do something to change it is an awesome thing. So, like I said, I hope this trickles throughout the country. Hope it trickles throughout the world, and you know, folks just make differences in their community. We, like I said, we have to be the authors of change. And another rule of organizing that I learned at my job, the Christian Activities Council, is, you know, never do for others what they can do for themselves. So we've got to get to the point where we empower people to you know, to start picking
like
stuff
that.
Up and doing it for themselves.
Yeah, I like that. I really like that. Do you, does your ministry, do you need help with the ministry? Do you need money for the ministry? Do you want people to give you money, or do you want them to give you time, their bodies, or what would you like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we need a lot of things. We're a small, struggling ministry that's dedicated to the needs of our neighborhood. So, yeah, I mean, you always need money, I tell you that.
Yeah, that was so the name of your church is Urban Hope. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Urban Hope Ministry.
Urban Hope Refuge.
Refuge. What was your dad's vision for Urban Hope?
My dad's vision for the church was to be the church that looks out for the social needs of the community. So he didn't believe in just preaching for you. He wanted to help you get to the point where you're able to live empowered, where you're able to live knowing that you can make a difference.
Right.
Where you are. So we are a social action church. We are a church that is a part of the community. All of our people don't drive in. Most of our people live in the neighborhood. So we're not a rich church because, like I said, folks don't have a job. So
right. We're
a church that's struggling. Most churches have folks that drive in with good jobs and all that stuff. We don't have that. We, you know, I'm a full-time pastor who doesn't get paid. So,
oh, my
gosh.
Know,
but it's out of the
love
of our heart.
There's love in your heart.
Right.
Do you, mm-hmm. If you had the opportunity to go to any business and say, hey, you know what? I pick and choose you to come to our neighborhood and create jobs. Is there any business out there, large business, that you would want, or would you just rather the people do it themselves?
No, I'd rather it be organic. I'd rather
okay.
it be something that grows because, I mean, if business comes to your community, they can leave your community,
right.
which happens all the time.
Right.
So I'd rather it be a sustainable business that comes in, that people grow themselves.
So how can folks reach you or reach the ministry, or if they're listening and they want to help, what would you suggest they do?
Absolutely. You can find me on Facebook, AJ Johnson. Like, I have too many friends now, so
you have too many friends.
It's gotten weird, right? So I started like a Pastor AJ Johnson fan page, just for folks to get in. And I'm on Instagram, AJ FOR the city at Gmail, and on Twitter, AJ for FOR the city. And you know, you can contact me directly. No superstar celebrity here, man. You can contact me by email at aj4forthecity@gmail.com.
Now, you're married.
Yes, I am married.
And you have a beautiful wife. I just have to mention that.
Thank you.
Very
Thank
lucky.
You. I did a good job in that department.
You did. Yeah, you did a good job. You did it on purpose, huh? is she a real partner for you? Does she like to help with the ministry and get down in the city? What does she like to do?
Absolutely. I married someone who
is just who loves church and loves the people of God just as much as I do. She is a great help. I mean, it's probably, I've made a lot of bad decisions, but this probably was the best one I've ever made, made ever. So
I like to hear that.
She's awesome. She's actually today she just filed her paperwork for her nonprofit called Rivers Women's Initiatives that that's going to help women in trauma. So she's just deep in it as I am.
Well, have her give me a call once it started. We'll get her on the show and we can talk about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And AJ, I know that you got to be somewhere at 2 o'clock. So I'm going to let you off the hook and let you go so that you can go back in and do that.
Well, you should left the hook. I missed an entire lunch and now
I'm so sorry.
Going back in. So
I'm so sorry about that.
Thank
but,
you. Thank
you
for you
know, one missed meal. Lots of people miss meals, right? Thank you so much for being my guest today. And if you've
Absolutely.
Listened to us, you know, please get in touch with AJ and get in touch with your urban neighborhoods and see if you can't be part of the solution instead of the problem. Thanks so much, AJ. Wherever we are in the world today or, you know, day or evening, I feel blessed that you listened to us. And thanks again for joining us. Take care. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye, AJ.
All right.